You're listening to I'm Right, Deal With It with Andy Parrish.
Yeah, here we go. Man, I could. The 90s were the best times. That music is the best I can make up from the 90s. Damn, they were great times. So much so. I mean, if you grew up in the 90s, you can relate to this for just a second. I'm going to sidetrack before we get into the debate of birthright citizenship. I, to this day, at 46 years old, every single time I unscrew a cap of Mountain Dew, it's like Pavlov's dog. I flip that bad boy over and see, hey, did I win a free Dew? Those were awesome times. Don't do that anymore, though. I'm kind of mad about that. Mountain Dew, if you're listening, just give me a bunch of caps that I can switch. I mean, it's just still a bunch of fun. Anyway, folks, I'm Andy Parrish. I'm your host. This is the Andy Parrish Show. I'm right. We're going to talk about birthright citizenship today. And before we do, and I don't like doing this, but I am going to pull out my conservative credentials because if anybody wants to question them, that and $2 will probably get you a bottle of, I don't know, gluten-free water somewhere. All right. Look, I was a chief of staff to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, the most conservative member of the House of Representatives. Got her elected several times as her campaign manager. I worked for LifeSite News, the largest pro-life publication in the United States of America, raising money for them and doing public relations for them. I worked on a U.S. Senate campaign to dethrone Al Franken, and I was the campaign manager to define marriage as one man, one woman only, and nothing its equivalent. I've put blood on the conservative floor. I've spilt more blood on the conservative floor that I shouldn't even be alive. That's how much blood I have lost. Again, I don't like doing that, but I don't like the outcome of my research about birthright citizenship. I don't even like it. But we have a government and we have a constitution for a reason. And our government was set up so brilliantly. The United States senators are elected to six-year terms. Every 2 years, one-third of those U.S. senators are up for election. The other two-thirds aren't. And every 2 years, the House is up for election. The reason we do that is the Senate's intention is to represent the needs of when they were elected, so 4 years ago, let's say, and of the future. So if you were elected 2 years ago, the future 4 years. That is their role. That guards against populism. The House of Representatives turns over every 2 years because they are populism. They are supposed to be leading the charge, telling the Senate what the people need right now. That's one of the reasons why all spending that happens must originate in the House of Representatives. The Senate can't originate it, but the House can. And then the Senate then takes up whatever we send them and determines the difference, okay? It is a huge safeguard against populism. Populism without something constraining it is bad. Really, really, really bad. I don't need to go through history and name world dictators to you who grew to power through populism. I don't even like saying some of their names. I mean, if I really need to, just, you know, ask your grandfather, anyone who served in the greatest generation ever, to name a few, and they will. They rose to power through populism. We have safeguards against that. It's our Constitution, and it's the way our government is set up to run. So we have this debate, and President Trump comes out, and President Trump signs an executive order declaring that birthright citizenship does not make you a citizen if you're born here. But then Trump goes on and he declares a national emergency at the southern border, which is important, and we're going to come back to that. That is for when he loses the Supreme Court case about whether being born here on U.S. soil makes you a citizen or not. He also declares that the cartels are a terrorist organization, which is also a safeguard for when he loses in the Supreme Court on whether being born on U.S. soil makes you a citizen or not. I love history. I love going back and reading and not reading. I actually don't like reading. I can't really read that well. Man, it wasn't until a couple of years ago I actually found out that I had moderate dyslexia, which I guess pretty much everybody knew except for me. That's how it worked out. But I love going back and I love learning about history. I absolutely love it. And I love to find out why we do what we do. The 14th Amendment was not included by the founders, obviously, because we only had 10. That was there to protect us. See, the Constitution protects us, and it defines what government can do. The fight against populism, that our rights can't be taken away, like the Second Amendment. They tried to take it away, but you can't. Maybe popular to want to ban guns, but you can't. Guarding against populism. But I want to go on. So here's why we have the 14th Amendment. This was a direct response to one of the most horrific decisions ever by the Supreme Court of the United States of America, and that was the Dred Scott decision. And the Dred Scott decision, in summary, was this. It was a black man living in a free state, but he was born from a slave. His mother was a slave. He wanted citizenship and the rights of citizenship. And so the Supreme Court went on and actually ruled against Dred Scott. Chief Justice Taney, who wrote the majority opinion, and he wrote some of the most egregious things that you're ever going to find. Like, they had no rights, which the white man was bound to respect. I mean, it's bad. Bad. You wonder why. All right, Eli, Charles Ponzi creates this Ponzi scheme where he just, like, how can I make money here? Give me some money and I'll keep some and I'll pay back investors. You guys know what a Ponzi scheme is. We need to name something after this Taney dude, because he was not a good dude, right? I mean, Charles Ponzi, man, he blemished his family's name forever. But up until today, you probably didn't know about this Chief Justice. Somehow we got a Taney someone. I don't know how you do it, but we have to. All right. Was not good. Reinforced racism, obviously, in the United States, which as conservatives, we don't support racism at all. And it sparked the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was introduced by Senator Jacob Howard of Michigan. Now, being a huge Buckeye fan, I have to say it's hard that anything good can come from Michigan, but this did, the 14th Amendment. Andrew Johnson opposed this, but he had no power to veto it. But he opposed the 14th Amendment, campaigned against it. But it passed Congress. It passed the Senate on a 33-11 vote. And it passed the U.S. House of Representatives on a 120-32 vote, and then was sent to the states and was ratified. Here's the best part. The 33 who voted in the favor of this in the Senate and the 120 in the House were Republicans. Every opposition vote came from Democrats. Liberal Democrats voted against this. And the key clause that we're here to talk about today: all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction, therefore, are citizens of the United States. So what does that mean? Senator Howard was asked, what does that mean? And Senator Howard said this. He said, every person born within the limits of the United States. Senator Trumbull stood up then and said that jurisdiction means that we need to exclude diplomats and enemy combatants. Those are the two exclusions. Could they have foreseen this anchor baby concept, this birth tourism? Not only did they foresee it, they were smack dab in the middle of it. We are debating the 14th Amendment in 1868. We had a huge wave of immigrants come here, 10 million people. We were in the midst of a great immigration happening within the United States of America. People were coming here. At that moment, when the amendment was drafted, they had the opportunity to exclude children of immigrants or put some other stipulation in there of what those children need to do. They had the opportunity to exclude people who didn't come here legally, because that was happening then. But they didn't. They chose two exclusions. They chose foreign diplomats and enemy combatants. We had a lot of immigration happening, but that's what they chose. Senator Howard said on the floor, every person born within the limits of the United States and subject to their jurisdiction is by virtue of natural law and national law a citizen of the United States. Senator Lyman Trumbull, the provision is that all persons born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction, therefore, are citizens. This means subject to complete jurisdiction, therefore. What do we mean by that? He said, not owing allegiance to anybody else. That's what it means. Allegiance does not mean you're a citizen from a different country, that you have an allegiance to them. All right. Here in the United States right now, we have jackasses pledging allegiance to ISIS, but they are still American citizens and they are still protected by the law. Where's their allegiance? Well, if you're making a dumbass video pledging allegiance to ISIS, clearly it's not the United States. But you know what? As a conservative libertarian, when you're caught and you are punished strongly, I want you to have every single right as an American citizen, because the rule of law means something to me. What does that mean, owing allegiance? And this is why it's important that Trump declared a emergency on the southern border and declared the cartels a terrorist organization. This is for when the Supreme Court upholds that children of illegal immigrants are indeed U.S. citizens. This is the backup plan. With the declaration of emergency and military on the border, a foreign terrorist is an enemy combatant. They're an enemy. They're raising arms against the United States. The declaration of national emergency on the southern border means that there is an invasion happening, and people who cross that border are not subject to the jurisdiction, therefore. It's a different ballgame. And because of that, any children they may have while here, so if you were born in the United States after this was declared, you can make an argument that you are not a citizen. But we have to respect the intent of what the amendment was when it was passed and the court's rulings up until then. I abhor abortion. I hate it. Awful. We're one of the only countries in the world that participate in this barbaric practice. The Constitution never says abortion anywhere. That was an opinion, but it was the law up until recently. Now states get to decide. States don't have that luxury when it comes to immigration, because states are a part of a union and we have basically an agreement when we all join. But here's what really, really rubs me about this whole debate. It's pretty clear that being born here, as of now, makes you a citizen. As long as you're not a foreign enemy combatant, as long as you are not a foreign diplomat. And later, they added Native Americans born on tribal land, because Native Americans are also sovereign. They're their own sovereign nation. The frustration, folks, comes in to me. Republicans are the ones who set this up. As a conservative libertarian, we believe that the Constitution and that our laws are colorblind. We do not care what color you are. We do not care what your family history is. We care about you as the individual, and we want to make sure that you have every right guaranteed to you under the Constitution that anybody else has, because individual liberties and rights do not know a color. They don't know a family history. You get to set your own future based on the country and the laws that we have. We respect the law over populism. Your rights under conservatives will never be taken from you because of populism. As I said, I set out on this thing to say, no, you're not a citizen. I learned differently, because the Constitution matters. This has been tested. The drafters of the amendment were seeing massive immigration, legal and illegal. And they said, born on the soil. And are subject to the jurisdiction, therefore. Subject to the jurisdiction, therefore, means can you be prosecuted for breaking the jurisdiction's subjections or laws for rule of order? And the answer is yes. Illegal immigrants are subject to the jurisdiction. They can be arrested. They can be tried for crimes. They can be deported. They're subject to the laws of our land. whether we like it or not, or until things are changed or interpreted differently, this is the law. Some of you are going to say out there, well, okay, so here's the problem is they have anchor babies and the parents get to stay because it's inhumane to tear apart a family. Stop it. Stop it. That is not inhumane. The child is an American citizen, but that doesn't magically extend to the parent. The parent is subject to the jurisdiction, therefore, which means and including up to deportation. And don't you dare blame our laws for separating families because we enforce them. The people who separate families are the ones who knowingly break the law or break the law and then we enforce it. Because we are a land of laws and rule and law and order, we will enforce them. It's funny when the lefties out there say, oh, it's so inhumane to tear these people apart. Really? Why do we have prisons here in the United States? Does that not tear families apart? Is that inhumane? If dad gets a DWI and kills somebody, goes to prison, did our laws tear that dad away from his family and his wife and his kids? Or did his actions tear him away from his family and his kids? Because we have to have order. We have to have rules. We have to have a way to guard against populism. Populism does not work. It did not work in the 40s in Germany. It does not work in Cuba. It did not work in the USSR. Populism doesn't work. That's how a lot of those leaders rose to power, was through populism. We have to have safeguards against populism if we want to protect our liberties and our rights and our freedoms for the future to come. And our founders knew that. When they established our government, they established it in a way where the Senate was staggered so much that it would represent the needs of the past and the future, and the House would represent the needs of the now. They knew it. It's not immoral. It's not inhumane to enforce laws to preserve the order and the structure of a society, because without it, we can't live free and fair. Imagine, just look back at all the populism that we've seen in our lifetime. I mean, the left is great at this. They're the party of populism, not us. All of a sudden, remember during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, all we heard about was Me Too. Where did Me go? Does Me Too still not have an issue? George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. What happened? More black people were shot under the Biden administration by police officers than under the Trump administration. What happened? As Americans, we are like the great ADD society, and I am the king. I shouldn't say that because we are a society of laws and rule and order, so I am the elected official of the ADD kingdom. And folks with ADD, we have one mode right now. That's it. We have one time zone this second. That's it. America, we are populists. We live in the now. But our government guards against that. So like I said, you know, I set out trying to say that they're not citizens. But folks, the more I look at this and the more I look and reflect at my conservative values and my libertarian values and my direct reading of the Constitution. Let me tell you, I flew to D.C. every other week for years. And as often as I could, I would go over to the National Archives to see the Constitution of the United States. It's that important to me. Let me assure you, never once did that thing get up as a living organism and start to breathe, as folks like to say. It is not a living and breathing document. It's a document that can be changed, but we have a process to guard against it. Do you not think by now if populism had its way, how many rights we would have had taken from us. You get a kick out of people, especially with guns. Our government. Oh, what is Fat Tim Walz or Fat Howard Dean? That's Tim Walz. I call him Fat. He's just, dude's weird. I mean, you ever see him do his cheerleader kick? Just Google Tim Walz cheer. It's bizarre. All right. He does this like high kick thing. All right. Like all the time. He's I'm a hunter and I support the Second Amendment and I don't need to use weapons that I carried in war. That was never the founder's intent. Bullshit. That was the founder's intent. We had just fought a war where we were severely outarmed, outmanned. By the grace of God, General Washington and his men crossed the Delaware, bought us time, got us more supplies, reinvigorated the spirit of freedom that is in every human today. They wanted to make sure that never happened again. And so they had the Second Amendment for that very purpose, so that we could pick up our arms at any time and fight if we had to. So stop it. But we have the Second Amendment. That protected us from populism. I don't like it. But I do, because that is who we are. We are conservatives. We do not create classes of people. We do not apply special laws to people. We treat people equally and fair under the law. Trump's going to lose this one. I also am not liking the way the administration is starting off. I'm a huge Trump guy. Was. Still am. But folks, these executive orders, the executive order power of the presidents that they have and pardon powers really need to be looked at too. We can't do anything until we change it. The pardon power that the president has, the executive order power that any president has, it's another step towards populism, not rule of law. Folks, I hope you took something away from this today. I hope you look at this debate differently. I hope you look at it in a way of, I may not agree with what's written in the Constitution. I may not agree with what the intent was. But that's how we live, and that is how we have order. And frankly, folks, it's how we have freedom. Because at any moment, without that document, the government can take every single right that you have away. But the document and the way our government is set up is a safeguard for that. Congress can act. Congress, the U.S. Senate, the House, they can amend the Constitution and send it to the state legislatures. And we can have this debate more then. And if it's changed, then it's changed. But until then, if you're born here, you are, with minor exclusions, the children of U.S. diplomats, the children of enemy occupants or enemy combatants, and children born on Native American tribal land. You don't fit that criteria, you are a U.S. citizen. Folks, I hope you will share this podcast. Let me know what you think. Let me know on X at Andy Parrish. Let me know on Facebook, Andy Parrish. Let me know on Instagram, Andy Parrish MN. And please leave a comment, follow me, send me an email, andy@andyparrishshow.com. I'd love to hear what you want to learn about, what you want me to talk about. But folks, when you run into somebody now and they're talking about birthright citizenship, look at them and say, I'm me, I'm right, deal with it.
You've been listening to I'm Right, Deal With It with Andy Parrish.